We're News Talk 1590 KBTA Ventura.
The following is a paid program. Gold Coast Broadcasting is not responsible for its content.
Tom Spence receives additional compensation for his participation during this paid program.
It's time now for Divorce Lisa Zonder Style. Now, here's your host, Colin Fluxman.
Hi, and welcome. Going through a divorce? Well, now's your chance to call in and have a divorce specialist answer your questions. We'll also bring you a wealth of tips and resources to guide you through the minefield that is divorce and help you cope with this traumatic time in your life. If you have any questions for our guests on any divorce-related topic, the number to call is 805-650-1590. 805-650-1590. I also want to acknowledge Tom Spence, who's here with us every week. Hi, Tom. He works very hard getting the whole thing together and taking your calls. Lisa Zonder is a certified family law specialist out of Westlake Village. She focuses her practice on mediation and the collaborative divorce process, as well as out-of-court solutions. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Colin. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Our other regular guest is Jerry Cohen, a divorce CPA who is an expert in helping you deal with the financial aspect of divorce. Welcome, Jerry.
Hi, Colin.
And we have a special guest who's driven up from the OC to be with us today, Bruce Friedenberg, who will talk about the collaborative process. Welcome, Bruce.
Hi, Colin. Thanks for having me up here.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. How was the drive up from Orange County?
Well, most of it was pretty good, but there's the particular predictable spots where it always becomes the parking lot near the airport,
yes,
near Santa Monica Boulevard,
right,
and then when you come over the hill.
Well, the number to call right now, if you like, 805-650-1590. You're welcome to ask our experts any questions you may have concerning your divorce. Let's start with you, Lisa. What is team mediation?
Colin, team mediation is something that I'm going to have to describe by first talking about what a single mediation process looks like.
Okay.
So with as a consumer, you can choose what your mediation looks like, what the optics are. And so you can have just one lawyer mediator who facilitates the negotiations between you and your spouse. And in that case, with a one mediator scenario, the lawyer mediator has the responsibility of listening very carefully, attempting to understand each of the parties' underlying needs, and that's different from what positions they're taking. It's what leads them to take a certain position in the case. The mediator's job is also to solicit proposals from each of the clients. For example, are you trying to buy out the other spouse's interest in a home, or are you trying to sell the home, rent it to a third party? That's part of the brainstorming process that we'll go through and talk about. The mediator also offers education and insight about the legal system, because frequently consumers, it's their first divorce or maybe their second, and they don't have enough information about what rights they have or what the legal system looks like. And also, as a mediator, we would facilitate brainstorming, which I alluded to just a minute ago. And that brainstorming session is where we help evaluate some of the proposals that have been tossed about between the parties. And if successful, the mediator can then draft a marital settlement agreement for the clients and file it with the court so that the clients actually never have to go to the courthouse. So that's what a single mediator looks like. By contrast, I'm going to talk about a team mediation, which is what you asked me. If the clients want to hire a team, they can decide to hire additional professionals to join the mediation session. So they could add a financial professional like Jerry Cohen. They could add a mental health professional like Bruce Friedenberg. And the other professionals can be brought in either on an as-needed basis, or they can be there for the entire duration of the mediation from start to finish. It's up to the couple. They really set the picture of what the mediation looks like for the rest of the case. So as a consumer, there are reasons why you might want a full team. If, for example, your case is a little bit more complicated and you have to divide stock options and have retirement plans and complex parenting issues, if you trigger each other, in conversations, those types of things may tend to make a mediation fail. So when you add the rest of the team members on board, it creates a sort of a safety or a cocoon environment for the couple. I know that Jerry and Bruce will talk a little bit more about their roles as mediation team members, and we'll also talk about collaborative divorce. But before they weigh in, I just want to say that in some of the cases, you'll want all three professionals on board. And when they are on board, they'll work also like the attorney as a neutral facilitator. And what that means is that they're not representing either party, But their goal as a team is to use their different types of expertise to help the families find solutions for whatever divorce questions they have. And so let me just go over really quickly and say what the hallmarks of mediation are, because we've
Please
told
go ahead, yes.
Yeah, we've told our listeners that many times that we're going to talk about mediation. Well, finally, we're here. We're talking about mediation. And so these are the hallmarks: respectful communication between the spouses, complete and accurate disclosures, and that's mandated under California law, but especially so in a mediated environment. Confidentiality, and that's that old cliche, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, so that nobody can go to the judge with any of the negotiations that occurred in the mediation session. Clients get to make the decisions, not the court. That's a really important hallmark in a mediation. That's what makes it different. And you can have independent lawyers reviewing your settlement agreement that you reach, hopefully, at the end of your mediation if you're successful. And also another hallmark of mediation and how it's different from court is that you can employ out-of-the-box thinking. You can be really creative in a mediation session and do things that the court might be limited by and not be able to do because the law doesn't allow them to have out-of-the-box thinking. It's just kind of minimal standards that are supplied and the judge has to basically follow.
So why then would couples use a team and not just an attorney to sit down in front of the attorney, the couple, and mediate to what the issues are?
Right. And some clients do self-select to just using a one attorney mediator model, but others find themselves with more challenging communication issues and they realize quickly on, or because the mediator hopefully educates them when they get started, to see that there are complicated financial issues and you want to use the right person for the job. And so that would best be handled by the financial person, you know, the CPA like a Jerry Cohn. And if there are emotional issues or parenting or child issues, you'd want to get a mental health professional involved.
Right. That makes sense. You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle, coming to you each week on AM 1590 KVTA from 3 to 4 p.m. Call us now, if you like, on 805-650-1590. 805-650-1590. Tom will take your call. We'll put you on the air and you can put your question to any one of our specialists here today. As a psychotherapist, I was going to say psychologist, but you're a psychotherapist in clinical practice. Bruce Friedenberg has worked with divorcing couples and their children since the early 80s and is one of the founding members of the Collaborative Divorce Solutions of Orange County. That's correct.
Yes.
Bruce has extensive training in collaborative divorce, mediation, domestic violence, chemical dependency, and trauma recovery and management of chronic pain. A very highly experienced and highly qualified individual. Thanks for joining us today, Bruce. Now, collaborative divorce is based on mutual respect and alleviating the current and future trauma common in divorce. How is this mutual respect developed? How do feuding couples get past their own anger and resentment and get to a place where they develop that mutual respect?
Well, Colin, as you easily can imagine, it hardly ever starts out that way. Obviously, at the beginning of a marriage, everybody's happy and communicating well, and when the person's not around, they're usually thinking good things about them instead of bad things about them. And by the time a couple gets to the point where they want a divorce, it's totally reversed for most people. So usually they'll come in with anger, hurt, fear, all those various things. And to explain how we would approach it as a team, let me first talk about how it differs from an adversarial process.
Like, yes, please.
What
do.
Most people do is litigation. I call it combat divorce. And many times the attorneys will instruct each person not to talk to their spouse, but to just talk to the attorney and the conversation goes through the attorney. So somebody comes to the attorney and tells some awful things, tales of drunkenness and cruelty and things like that, and all the bad things the person's doing. And then that attorney says, that rat, and then they'll write a nasty letter back and it goes off and on and on. In this process, we have a team of people whose job is to dampen down the process. And so one of the ways to do that is to help people identify their own self-talk. Like, for example, right now while I'm talking, everybody here is having a conversation with themselves. They're thinking they agree with me, they don't agree with me, they wish I'd talk about something else, they like my voice, they don't like my voice, whatever. And so
you have a very nice voice. Thank you.
So some of the conversations might be fear-based. They may think of what's going to happen to them and then go to the worst possible outcome. And then in their mind, it feels like that's the only possible outcome. So what I would do as a coach is help bring that fear back into a perspective. And if it was a money fear, I'd turn them over to Jerry, and Jerry would talk to them about the financial realities, not ending up in a dumpster somewhere.
You alluded to Jerry. A question for you now, Jerry. What is the role of the divorce financial professional in a typical no-court process?
In the no-court process, Colin, we act as a neutral financial as opposed to some mediations and certainly more of a traditional litigation model where each person has their own financial expert and sometimes multiple financial experts. I find this a more challenging job for myself, and maybe the other professionals feel the same way, but I also get a lot of gratification and I feel it's something that we really are helping the couple with. We're all focusing on their needs and objectives. In my case, their financial needs, both current and during divorce, and even some long-term issues we could look at. It also lets us include issues that we can't in a more traditional process where a judge is making decisions, there's certain rules they have to follow, and there's certain things the either party cannot really bring up or address as part of the divorce. Everything's open in this type of process. So is the other guests here have mentioned, we touch the financial, the emotional, and the legal issues. And it's all blended together, and we're each working off of each other. So I find it is probably one of the more effective and cost-effective and effective in the outcome as other processes.
Lisa, back to you for a moment. What is the... can you describe the collaborative divorce process briefly?
Yeah, Colin, divorce is experienced by clients on many levels, financial, emotional, and legal. We've been saying that, but I just want to put that out there right up front. So like a mediation in the collaborative divorce process, we use a team of professionals from the start of the process to the end, generally. The common goal for the professionals on a collaborative divorce team is that they're trying to help the clients reach decisions that are best for them and their families. And one difference, though, from mediation is that with collaborative, each of the clients has his or her own lawyer, which you don't have in a mediated environment, generally speaking. And that's going to happen from beginning of process to end. So that's different from having one mediator in the middle. Some of the other hallmarks of collaborative divorce, what makes it really different and stand out and a really, you know, wonderful process for people to consider, is that the team lawyers there commit to stay out of court. And that's huge, because when you threaten to go to court, obviously you can sabotage the process really quickly, settlement falls apart, and then you end up spending money in the courthouse. In this way, the clients have a safe place to focus on solving problems, because the lawyers are not engaging in yet a second battleground on the side that's distracting. And it incentivizes the lawyers to stay with the settlement instead of just saying, see you in court, which is obviously where lawyers, you know, can fuel the flames quite a bit. And that's where they earn the big bucks, so to speak, because that's how litigation is. So no threatening court intervention in the collaborative process, and no motions are going to be filed. These are really important points for clients to consider. That really creates a safety zone. Also, with the disqualification agreement, that sounds like kind of a big term, but with a disqualification agreement, the lawyers say, hey, we're out of a job if we can't get your case settled. That's a really important point. That's actually really powerful. And a lot of lawyers look at that as, you know, not good for the clients. They think, well, wait a minute, that's not safe. I need to be able to go to court for my client. But really what you're doing is setting up a positioning in the case that leads me to say, okay, the minute I don't like the position your client took, or you don't accept my client's positioning, I'm going to threaten court and this whole process is over. That doesn't create a safe environment for the clients. The other hallmarks would be that it's confidential, it's private. The team meetings are generally held in private offices, which is really different from being in the courthouse. And in my experience, oftentimes your divorce case can be settled with 3 or 4 full team meetings, and then obviously there'd be some other meetings. And the couple actually gets to set their own pace, to set the schedules. And depending on their personal temperaments and how the case is going, they can control the process to a large extent. and they still have all the obligations that you do when you're going through a court divorce. There are many lawyers who question or are skeptical about the approach, the collaborative approach, and they say, well, it's too kumbaya, you know, it's too, how do you trust any of the, this is a war, I can't trust. How are you crazy? You're not going to trust what your spouse is giving you, really? Hmm. I mean, this is a divorce process after all. So the clients are still required to give full and informal disclosure of all of the information, including their assets, their debts, their income and expenses, and to supply any information really that's needed for the both of the clients to make an informed decision. So really important hallmarks of collaborative. They aren't going to have formal discovery devices, so they won't have depositions and subpoenas and formal document demands and all the things traditional litigators do. But if the parties sign an agreement up front that essentially says that we're committed to this process, that, you know, we're going to give up our formal discovery devices, but also that we're not going to take advantages of the mistakes of any of the parties in the process. So there's a lot of terms are reduced to writing. So it's not necessarily all based on trust, but there is something in writing that you've agreed to. And, you know, there are sometimes misuses of the process, and we could talk about those in a minute.
Jerry, you had something to add?
Yeah, I'd just like to add to what Lisa was just explaining about the professionals withdrawing if the clients aren't following the rules, per se. And that applies to all the professionals, which I think is more good news than bad news. I think it keeps the professionals motivated to make it work. And it doesn't make it as easy for someone to fire one of the professionals, which is usually happens when not the professional is doing something that's not right. It's just they think they're going to get a better or different result. So I think it's a very powerful tool, and it motivates us as professionals to really help them and make it work.
If you have any questions on any divorce-related issue, please call 805-650-1590. That's 805-650-1590. The advice given by our panel is not intended as legal or other professional advice. For that, you need to set up a private consultation with a reputable professional. And if you need to know more about Lisa's services, then go to zondafamilylaw.com.
Are you contemplating divorce? Maybe you've already filed for divorce and are overwhelmed by the process, or you're in the midst of a divorce and not sure what to do next. Well, we have the answer for you. The Second Saturday Divorce Workshop. Explore the legal, financial, and emotional aspects of divorce. Discover community resources available to help you. Talk with others experiencing similar life changes. Learn from experts who have guided others through divorce. Workshops are held at 2625 Townsgate Road, Suite 330, Westlake Village, on the second Saturday of each month from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Register by calling 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810 or email us at secondsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. That's 2ndsaturdaywestlake@gmail.com. Call 805-372-1810. 805-372-1810. If you're looking for workshop locations other than Westlake Village, check out the website at wife.org. That's wife.org.
You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonda Style on AM 1590 KVTA. We're on the air each Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. If you have a question for any one of our guests on any divorce-related issue, please call 805-650-1590, 805-650-1590. One of our guests today is Bruce Friedenberg, who's come up from Orange County. Bruce is a psychotherapist in clinical practice. Bruce, it sounds like the collaborative divorce process works for people who already get along pretty well. Why couldn't a couple just do it themselves?
Well, one would think, but again, as I mentioned earlier, by the time people decide to get divorced, even if they, in fact, it's odd when people come into my office and say, this is going to be smooth and we've got it all worked out. And they do until they actually start working on the details of who gets what and why and who did what to who, and then that whole thing gets started. And one of the real beauties of the team approach, I'd like to point out that divorce is much different than other legal disputes, like in business or things like that, where typically the people are not going to have an ongoing relationship. But in divorce, people are going to have an ongoing relationship with extended family members on both sides. They've often got mutual, they've almost always got mutual friends who are going to weigh in with opinions. And so over time, it gets really complicated. There's usually what we call a Greek chorus in the background. Somebody says, well, my cousin Judy got $3 million, or you should have had the kids all the time a long time ago, and things like that that spark fights, and a lot of times they're just under the surface and don't take much. So I suppose if people don't have any assets and they don't have any kids and everything has been getting along so fine that you don't even, they don't know why they're getting divorced, they could probably do it by themselves. But I would never myself try to mediate a divorce without an attorney present, because a lot of times you say something in English and find out those words don't mean that at all in legalese.
Yes.
And you've just really hurt yourself out of ignorance.
Lisa, what about, and perhaps this is a question for both of you, in fact, all three maybe, what about situations in which there are suspicions of domestic violence or coercive control? Who would like to address that?
Well, I just, but can I back up just a second,
yes, of course,
Colin, because I wanted to add something to what Bruce said, and he was talking about why not just do it yourself, because we, as attorneys, we see that kind of going on all the
yes.
time, and I really have no issue with people trying to, you know, take control of their own divorce and get it done, but here's some of the downside, and just the short answer, because attorneys can talk about this for hours, you
go
can
ahead.
Imagine. We don't have enough time in the show to really talk about all
right.
of it, but you take a risk of missing assets, you know, getting shortchanged, failing to get security for promissory notes that you might negotiate. You might run afoul of tax laws. You might fail to find assets, have unenforceable agreements if you don't write them up carefully. Clients sometimes have to come into my office and tell me about the, you know, divorce agreements that they struck, and we have to undo them and literally try to do a set aside, and that has to be done within statutory periods. So it gets pretty complicated. I mean, I'm just giving you one example just quickly. In one, a wife was waiting. She was hoping to get money out of the home, and husband had been living in it. And she said, okay, you know, that's what I'm going to get at the end of this divorce. I have a $50,000 payment coming to me. She counted on it. And so what happened was she got this note in the house, and husband then stopped making all the payments. He filed a bankruptcy, and then she came to me crying, saying essentially, he's lost the house. I don't have the $50,000. He'll never pay me. I got shafted in the divorce, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, and I said, well, you got the raw end of the deal, and, you know, we can try to do what we can, but, I mean, there was no money there. So even if we could, you know, try and unwind the agreement or go back to the court and ask for some equitable relief, you know, essentially there wasn't a lot of money to collect against. So there are real dangers. And here, another example is if you don't prepare court orders or quadros to divide retirement accounts and your former spouse remarries, you could lose your interest in a pension. So really lots of minefields and danger zones for the clients, and they need to be really careful and think twice about the do-it-yourself approach. If you're going to try to do it yourself, at least have an attorney look at the agreement before you sign it.
Or Lisa, I wanted to add that even, let's say there was a case where somebody didn't have a hidden agenda of stop paying on the house. I've seen cases where somebody thought they were being generous by saying, well, you just take the house and I'll take these other things. And they didn't have an attorney or a financial specialist to project out 6 years. And the person who got the house was not going to be able to make the payments without dipping into the value of the house. And they were going to be homeless in 6 years, but without an expert to point out that what might seem like a generous offer to both of them would really be ruinous for one of the parties.
Jerry, you have a point to make there?
Yeah, and just to add to that, to build on what both Lisa and Bruce mentioned, I've worked on cases where one party was an attorney and one party, sometimes on both sides, you know, CPA, or had the background in what you think, well, I'm an attorney, I know the legal, I'm a CPA, I know the financial. I've been practicing for quite a long time as a CPA, and the first 20 years is more traditional accounting until the last 12 years or so of really doing this work full time. There's a lot of issues I never just came across. I didn't do a lot of divorce work with clients. I knew the tax law, but there's a lot of provisions in the tax law and certainly legal issues that are sometimes even contrary to the tax law, and every divorce has emotional issues, and I haven't yet met a couple between the two of them that can handle all three of those as effectively as a team.
Right.
And in the processes we're talking about today, particularly a team mediation, we provide as much or little information or help clients need. So if they could do half of it themselves and we help them with the last half, it's much more efficient.
Can we get back to the issue of domestic violence? that I put. Who would like to address that? Go ahead.
I know that there are some people who think that the collaborative process would not work in cases where there's domestic violence or coercion, but in my experience, actually, in those cases, a team approach would really be the safest place. It's been my experience in watching the news and watching other attorneys' cases that if somebody's really violent, a restraining order only restrains the least dangerous people. And a restraining order is not going to protect somebody from a murder-suicide if in a real extreme case. But if you've got a team of people, and particularly mental health professionals who are working as divorce coaches, they're going to notice those things over time and help the person dampen down their anger, notice if things are escalating. There was a case in Seal Beach in my neck of the woods about a year ago where somebody came into a parking lot and shot a lot of people in a hair salon while he was there killing his wife, including people parked outside. And in the interviews afterwards, the attorneys were saying, gee, we don't understand what happened. We went to court and nothing happened. So I don't know what went on. Well, when I read the background and the other coaches I know, we figured it out. This guy had been waiting months to get a ruling on when he could see his kids again.
Right.
And he was already had a history that sounded fairly suspect, and he didn't have anybody helping him damp it down. So if somebody had been working with him, they might have noticed he was a hair trigger coming into that day when, quote unquote, nothing happened. And so I think that you would have to modify it. You may have to have negotiations going on in different rooms in a real dangerous case where people can't talk to each other. But it seems to me it has the potential for being a much safer place for people. I don't know what Lisa and Jerry.
Lisa, your input on that?
Well, without commenting specifically on the domestic violence, I would think, Bruce, you would agree with me that cases are idiosyncratic. There is no kind of black and white rule and no metric available for us to know exactly what kind of cases would be a great fit for collaborative or even for a mediation model. But we know that there are some indications where cases are going to be more likely, to fall out of a settlement. And I think I've seen some research materials on red flag factors that make it difficult or impossible to have a CD case or a collaborative divorce case, settle successfully. And that would be if the parties have issues with invading the privacy of the other, if there's verbal abuse between the parties, if there's an inability to secure cooperation of the other spouse, difficulty getting disclosure of facts and documents, and if there are some unilateral actions, sometimes, for example, there also could be unrealistic expectations about how a process like collaborative divorce actually works. So if there's a lack of trust of one of or more of the professionals, that's going to be an indicator or red flag. As well as the presence of mental health issues, an extreme lack of empathy. Bruce, would you agree? I see you're nodding your head on that one.
Yes. I didn't say it would be easy in a collaborative. I just think it would be offer an opportunity for a safer environment, and it could fall out.
It could fall out.
And I think that there are cases when at least you might get a heads up on potential that you wouldn't find out by going that route first. But you're right. If you're trying to deal with somebody who is just a total crook, and you can't, in a transparent process where you're really depending on people to be honest, you're already starting with a big handicap that's not likely to work out.
Yeah, and I mean, so there is, for the practitioner, for the lawyers who are doing, or the other mental health professionals doing collaborative divorce work, because there's no scientific or quantifiable metric for them to look at to determine whether the model is going to work or fail for the clients, it's hard for us to know. So we have to do as good a job as we can, a thorough screening, and try to filter that out ahead of time. I think, for example, there's even a question if a party's ability to participate in the proceedings, like in the negotiations themselves, is questionable, because how do we even know someone has mental capacity to be, present and mentally kind of with it to participate in a collaborative team process?
This is certainly a very challenging thing, I'm sure, for all of you professionals. You're listening to Divorce Lisa Zonderstyle on AM 1590 KVTA. We're on the air each Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. And if you have any questions for any one of our guests on any divorce-related issue, if it's the legal aspect of filing for the divorce or what we've been discussing today, please call 805-650-1590, 805-650-1590.
I just want to point out that that's really illustrated the value of having a team, where my focus would be on, I think we can make this work, and I would figure out ways, and then Lisa would be carefully calculating the horrible disaster waiting should we turn out to be wrong, and she'd be looking for ways to, you know, maybe let's take this on sideways, you know.
Now, that in itself is very challenging. What he's saying now, I mean, weighing up all the aspects of this thing must be extremely challenging. I'm sure you have many hair-raising stories to tell.
And we do, actually. As collaborative professionals, we debrief with each other and make sure before we go into meetings that we're all on the same page about things, so that we're not guiding the clients and hope, you know, leading them down the wrong path. Actually, it's expensive to go through any process, and especially where you have a full team. So we have to be really careful about screening and making sure that, you know, we do our best and use our best judgment to help the couple decide if they're a good fit for collaborative or not.
There are three components to any divorce: legal, financial, and emotional. The emotional elements often get overlooked, as attention is given to the legal and financial tasks required for settlement. Divorce coach Teresa Hayes has seen the emotional issues of the divorce persist for years and years after the divorce papers are filed with the court. There are actually two divorces, the legal one and the emotional one. Teresa can assist you throughout your emotional divorce in four key areas: effectively communicating so that your needs are heard and you can listen to your spouse without getting triggered into becoming upset. This lays the groundwork for your co-parenting relationship. Gaining the clarity you need to make decisions about financial and parenting plans. Restructuring your family so your children thrive. Coping with the pain and stress of the divorce, healing the hurt so you can begin your new life. Teresa Hayes is dedicated to transforming divorce from a battlefield to an opportunity for peacemaking. Call 818-312-4850 for more information. That's 818-312-4850, or email newway2b@msn.com. That's newway2b@msn.com. Visit the website at newway2b.com. Divorce Lisa Zonder Style on the air each Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. on AM 1590 KVTA. We welcome your calls, and the number to dial right now, and Tom will take your call, 805-650-1590. Bruce, how does the collaborative divorce process deal with child custody issues?
One of the hallmarks of the collaborative process is more than any other process, in my opinion, really centers on taking care of the kids. One of the players is a neutral child specialist, and their job is to be the voice of the children in all meetings and at all times. Now, the kids don't get a choice. The parents are going to divorce, but they do get a voice. And so one of the big advantages is the neutral child specialist is usually the only person on the professional team that has a chance to meet the whole family. It's met both parents. He or she has met with the kids individually, with the parents, together with the parents. Might have information on hidden agendas that could be helpful for the team in bringing this to a close. And also, kids a lot of times won't tell the parents what's really on their mind during a divorce. It's shocking for them. The parents might imagine that one parent will say, well, the kids got to stay in the house. They need the same house. They want that continuity. And the parent might believe that. And yet when I meet with the children, if I'm the child specialist, I might discover what the kids want more than anything is for the parents to not fight as much. And if keeping the house is going to create more of a fight, that's going to be a problem. The other thing is when people have older kids, like teenagers, and the teenager says, I'm fine. Well, what parent doesn't want to believe their kid's fine? And I'll ask people, raise your hand. When you were a teenager, did you want more supervision or less supervision? Well, everybody wants less. And to tell your parents you're having problems is an invitation for more supervision.
Yes, yes.
And even the adult children, their life is going to change if the parents divorce. They have to decide how they're going to not be caught in the middle, how they're not going to choose up sides, where to go at the holidays, what to do with the grandkids. All those things come into play, and the child specialist can help that be part of the parents' awareness when they're negotiating.
How is a divorce coach different from a therapist, and why does your group insist that the coach be a licensed therapist? Why not a life coach or someone like that?
Boy, that's one of my particular peeves when I see somebody who's advertised themselves as a life coach, because I'm thinking, well, if I wanted a business coach, I would want somebody who'd had a lot of success in a particular business. And sometimes a life coach is somebody who generally has an idea that they can help people or that they know how to answer questions, but they don't necessarily. And I even saw a school that was the trained life coaches say the difference between a life coach and a therapist and a consultant is a consultant and a therapist have to know more than the client, but the life coach doesn't. And so now as a therapist, I would bring all of my tools, all of my skills, my experience to dampen down the fight, to help the people see what's going on, to make changes. But as a coach, I'm not trying to help them rewrite their whole life or solve everything in their life. My job is to help them be ready to make business decisions when they're involved in the business aspect of divorce, which is the attorneys and the financials, you know,
yes.
Money and kids and the legal documents. And if people are angry or afraid, it's the worst possible neurological state to make any decisions. And people can, if they're making lifetime decisions when they're afraid or angry, literally they neurologically do not have access to the part of the brain that can solve problems creatively. One of the things about being angry is it gives us a false sense of confidence and a false sense of being right. And so people will do all kinds of drastic things. So a divorce coach who knows how to deal with those things can be helpful. I'm also a big believer in self-management techniques. I teach people to do things they can do on their own. I've created some audio CDs that have even been useful in helping people stop panicking.
Tell us a little about the CDs.
Well, I have two sets. One's called Sleep Solutions, and it has proven to be better than 96% effective for sleep problems, which is a big problem for people when they're fearful and angry. And I have a more expanded version called Anxiety Solution, which has additional CDs in it besides the sleep one. I've actually had people successfully control panic attacks with these. So it's really good at helping people dampen down their anxiety when they're not meeting with anybody so that it's not just a continuous escalation on the way. As I mentioned earlier, teaching people how to identify their self-talk, because I always ask people, do you want your self-talk to support your hopes or your fears? And of course, everybody wants it to support their hopes. And when we're projecting into the future until it actually happens, we're just making it up. So if we make up a story that improves their ability to be successful, then it's a whole lot better than just letting them run wild by their own. And yes, you could.
Okay. Jerry, I have a question for you. Can you tell us what some of the common financial mistakes you see during the divorce process?
Yeah, I guess unfortunately quite a few. I find one of the biggest ones is that couples, when they're facing this, and each independently will start hiring professionals, usually contacting attorneys first, and that's important. I think you have to start meeting with and deciding who you want to work with to help you through it. But I think before that, it's more important to determine what type of process you're going through. And we spoke about some of the different options today's show. But if you're going to litigate, you probably don't want a mediator. You need two litigating attorneys. And if you want to do something like team mediation, you probably don't want two litigators. I think that's where I see a lot of expenses, a lot of time spent, and not the right result. Or even worse, one thinks we're going to mediate,
yes.
One thinks they're going to litigate, and the team is really mixed up. So I think it's very important to start out by trying to educate yourself, interview some professionals that work in the divorce area, and try to understand what your options are first, and then start building a team or professionals to work with.
Jerry, you're talking about starting up a question about process. The first thing the clients really need to do is figure out what process they're using so they're on the same page about whether they're going through the divorce, you know, in court or out of court, and then if they're going to use an out-of-court process, which one.
Very good.
Just clarifying, yes.
This is Ventura County's own divorce talk show on AM 1590 KVTA, each week, 3 to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. I'm Colin Flaxman. In the studio, Lisa Zonder, a divorce attorney specializing in mediation and the collaborative divorce process. Jerry Cohen, a divorce CPA, and our special guest today from Orange County, psychotherapist Bruce Friedenberg. Now, Bruce has very kindly agreed to give away one of this CD collection. Just briefly tell us about that again. And if you'd like this collection, anxiety solution, handling anxiety and sleep problems, right?
Yes, yes.
Then give us a call right now. Our number is 805-650-1590. You don't need to ask a question. First caller in will receive a free copy of Anxiety Solution.
Yes.
Bruce, just briefly tell us about that again,
okay,
please.
Well, there are six CDs in the package. Three of them are meditative. And the advantages of this is for people who can't quiet their mind enough to even get calmed down. When we get in the deeper states of relaxation, it actually blocks the receptors in our brain for all the fight or flight chemicals that our body is producing. So then it allows your body to process them out naturally. If people are not doing that, when you're anxious, you're producing, well, so many chemicals, I can't even pronounce them all, but one is called cortisol, and it's been described as being like hydrochloric acid to your hippocampus, which is the part of the brain that regulates your emotion. And if you're constantly damaging it, people actually get stuck in anger and depression, and they can't get out of it. And when you get into those deeper levels of meditation, relaxation on a daily basis, you actually can repair those parts of the brain. For people who have trouble sleeping, once those chemicals are not constantly amping them up, they can just fall asleep naturally. So there's three of those type. And then there's a series of three recordings. I did live recordings on how you can cope with change in a more painless way. And so people can listen to those three in the car when they're driving or when they're just walking around the house.
805-650-1590. If you'd like to be a recipient of Anxiety Solution, please call that number now. Lisa, how many cases have you had fall out of the collaborative process, failed to settle?
Well, I'm not proud that I actually had one fall out, but I did. The good news is when it fell out early on in the process. So what happened was I got trained in the full team collaborative model in 2004. And one of my first cases, the husband and wife came in, they sat next to each other. It seemed like a very amicable situation. And I met with the other attorney and we kind of did things a little kind of not full team approach. We first met with just two attorneys and didn't hire the CPA or the, you know, financial professional. We hadn't hired the, you know, divorce coach yet. We weren't really fully on board with the full team. This was an exploratory meeting. And the husband and wife started talking. She asked him for a tax return, and he brought in just a few sheets of paper, not even a complete return. And then I got a follow-up call from her, and she said, well, you know, he's contacted me offline and said if I ask for the rest of this information that, you know, you imagine fill in the rest of the blank there, threat, threat, threat. And so, you know, she and I had a heart-to-heart discussion about whether collaborative would be a good idea. And I did have one other case where we didn't settle every single issue, so there were just a couple left over, but they had gotten almost all of their, case settled using a collaborative process. But if you look around, you know, there are going to be a few that fall out naturally because either the couple is not suited for the process or somebody's gaming the system and misusing it. So that's naturally going to happen the more you handle these cases.
Bruce, a question for you. What happens if the couple finds out that some of the agreements that they reached are not working after the divorce is final? Would they then have to find an attorney and then go to court?
Not at all. One of the things in our ethics is that when the case is over, the team stays available for the clients. And so we have to preserve that relationship. So, for instance, if Lisa represented a couple in collaborative divorce, afterwards, if they wanted her to function as an attorney for her in other things, she wouldn't be able to do that. Same with Jerry. He wouldn't be able to be their tax guy or their financial advisor, because if he became that for one of them, then he's not a neutral anymore. And as a coach, I can never be the therapist for any of my clients. So if they come back years later and they need us, we're still available as a
right.
team.
Okay. This is basically a question to the team. When a couple chooses a team mediation or collaborative team process, isn't divorce already expensive enough without adding more professionals? I think our trio of professionals can each address this question. Perhaps starting with you, Bruce?
We actually do keep statistics, and there's an international association to keep statistics. And I wish I could give you the exact figures right now, but I know most of the time, even with all the team members, it's less expensive than litigation. But for me, that's not the important part of the service. We're not selling a cheaper service, we're selling a better service. And it's easy for a financial advisor or an attorney to value something tangible like a pension plan. But what's the price of being able to dance at your daughter's wedding? or being able to show up at graduations without everybody flinching because you showed up. So I think that if you look at the value of what you're getting, I think it's a much better service, far superior than any of the others.
Right. Jerry, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I would agree completely with what Bruce said, that I actually feel it could actually save money. When you're having a team that are focused on your needs and objectives, and you're having experts in each of the areas, legal, financial, and emotional, you're paying for an expert, and particularly with a child specialist and a financial neutral, you're not having to hire two financials and two child specialists. So you're hiring less people, and you're hiring people that have an expertise in their area. I wouldn't give legal advice. I can't. I don't have the knowledge, and I'd get in big trouble if I did.
Yes.
And attorneys typically don't give tax advice. So we're each doing what we're most knowledgeable about and most efficient, and I really think it does save money.
Couldn't a couple just do it themselves? Why not just go to court and let the judge decide? Lisa?
Well, they can do it themselves. I just want to comment. Can I step back just for a second,
yes,
Colin?
Of course,
you skipped
means.
Me, and I didn't get
to answer.
Oh, I
didn't mean to do that.
I would echo the sentiments that Jerry and Bruce expressed about, you know, the expense of a collaborative divorce or a mediation with a team. But it's really important to note that you have to get the right person to do the job. And, you know, I think Jerry made that point. A lot of people confuse the one attorney model and think, oh, I'm just going to hire that one attorney. They're going to ask me for a $7,500 retainer deposit, and somehow they're going to get it all done so I can just eliminate the rest of the team. And what they fail to realize is that the attorney is not trained as a mental health professional, not trained as a CPA or a CFP. And, you know, if you pay a lawyer to go to court, generally you are going to end up spending more money than in any out-of-court process. I mean, there's no guarantee in it, obviously. But for the most part, like I said, lawyers aren't trained to handle the emotional aspects of the case. So you could end up paying a very high hourly rate to the wrong professional. So if, you know, you go into your lawyer's office and you start venting about your soon-to-be ex-spouse, the lawyer isn't trained, and yet you're paying them more than you would your mental health professional. It may be convenient, but it's definitely not cost-effective.
Colin, I'd also like to point out that the whole collaborative model was started by attorneys, family law attorneys like Lisa. I remember one of the people in our group when they approached me when the group was first getting started, and they said they just got really tired of winning cases while destroying families. So I think that's a good way to look at it in the balance.
Our number is 805-650-1590. Talk to Lisa, Jerry, or Bruce. If you've just tuned in, we're discussing going through a mediation or collaborative divorce out-of-court process. Bruce, one question for you again. What do you think is the most important benefit of the collaborative divorce process?
You know, I get asked that a lot, and it's hard for me to pick one because there's so many. One is the fact that you get the right professional for the right part of the job. So you're really getting top quality service for every aspect. And it's easy to overlook, as we mentioned earlier, divorce has two tracks going on. There's the business track, which is legal and financial. And right simultaneously underneath it is the emotional track. And if the emotional track's not handled well, it'll blow the other one right off the track. Also, the kids are really well taken care of. But I guess if there was just one thing, I would say it's that the couple gets to decide what's going to happen. I'll often ask people, who do you want to decide what happens to your children and your assets? Do you want it to be you and your spouse, or do you want it to be a stranger in a black robe? And most people choose the first, and this process allows that. So the idea that I would get to choose what's going to happen with my kids and my belongings, because nothing can happen unless it's a consensus. And agreements that take that require consensus take longer to reach, but they're more enduring. If you went to court and somebody judged something against you that really hurt you, how long would that judgment last? Long enough till you save money to go back and complain, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Lisa, I think you had.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, you know, kind of like a visual image for people who are thinking about what process do I, you know, do I want to select. The process feels so different in a litigated setting if you're in court. And, you know, one thing I do sometimes suggest to my clients is they actually go to the courthouse, sit there, and get the feel of what it's like to go through a litigated case, see how it feels to you. But imagine how you would feel if you're pitted against your spouse in a public setting, in a courtroom, and, you know, you walk in knowing that it's either win or lose on your issue. There's usually no gray, but someone else in a black robe gets to call the balls or the strikes. And then contrast that with the visual image of sitting in someone's private office. Oftentimes when we do these collaborative divorce meetings, we have food out. Don't ask me. I think it's meant to be a little friendlier and inviting, food and beverages. And then a feeling of a safe place where you can settle your case. And there's crosstalk. You know, if you're in the courthouse, you're really not allowed to talk to the other party. You can't really talk to the other lawyer. You don't want to. And for a variety of reasons, it's just not encouraged, because that's not the place to give away, you know, state secrets. But if you're in a collaborative environment in someone's private office and there's food out and everybody's working for the common good, the feel of it is so different. You know, you'll feel a much safer cocoon, like I said earlier. You get to speak up. You get to have a say in the outcome, a voice. And we assume that you're in there and you're smart and you know your life better than some third party who's up there in a black robe.
Right,
and
yes.
Even if the judge is really brilliant, you do have brilliant jurists. They do the best they can with the tools they have up on the bench, you know, limited by the law to make the right decisions. But it doesn't mean that they know exactly what's best for the family, and they can't necessarily use that out-of-the-box thinking and those creative approaches. So if you contrast the two processes, the whole feel of it is so different. And unless you've gone through both processes, you know, it's hard to know that. It's really hard. I try to convey it to clients, but unless they go sit in that courthouse in Ventura or L.A. or San Fernando or Van Nuys, they're not going to get a sense of that.
Yeah, in fact, when I tell people to do that, I tell them to be sure and pack a lunch, because you don't want to miss the afternoon show. Because, well, what happens, fatigue sets in. And when people get fatigued, patience goes out the window, anger comes in, and rational decisions are gone.
We got a call from someone who didn't want to go on the air, and he asks, how do you get a vindictive, malicious woman to calm down and realize that this is not a good way to handle the divorce? How do you do that? This is a question that we had from someone who didn't want to go on the air and be recognized, perhaps. So,
well,
Bruce, over to you.
It would be hard to give specific advice, because I wouldn't know the person's definition of a malicious woman, and I wouldn't know why she's so angry.
Let's talk in generic terms.
So in generic terms, yes. I guess what I would do, if somebody came to me and they were really angry like that, or if a couple, and I was working with another coach, we'd explore what the anger was about. I'd educate them on the fact, and you can look it up, folks, it's real. When you're angry, you actually become stupider. So if you're going to make, because you don't have access to the part of your brain, it's designed that way. When our ancestors were trying to get away from the lion, the ones who stopped to think of the options didn't make it. You know,
you kind of lose all sense of reality,
The brain thinking, you're not supposed to be thinking, you're supposed to be running here. So, and so when we're angry or afraid, we actually make ourselves stupider. And so I don't think anybody wants to make lifelong decisions.
Of course not.
With a, you know, a handicap. Right. So then I would teach them ways to lower their anger, at least to decide when they want to be angry, because nobody enjoys being angry all the time. And if they were halfway willing to listen, and if there was something the other person could learn to do that unnecessarily provoked the anger, then we'd have a talk about maybe there's another way to address that situation. Don't give up your point, but you know, you can do it in a way that doesn't elicit more anger.
Sounds like a lot of benefits and advantages in doing it the way we've been discussing today. Lisa, you had a point to make?
Well, I know we're running out of time, and I just wanted to add some of the research on collaborative divorce, what it shows in terms of client satisfaction. So research shows high levels of client satisfaction, and that collaborative law resolves disputes faster and more economically, and with less emotional strain than traditional settlement negotiations. And there have been studies by the International Academy of Collaborative Professionals called IACP who have done these long-term studies, and they looked at 933 cases between 2006 and 2010. I think there's a study by a woman, Linda Ray, and revealed some very important findings on collaborative divorce. And specifically, 80 of the CD cases, which is collaborative divorce, settled with agreement on all issues. There were an encouraging 86% of the time of those cases being settled. So that's huge. And also, one other thing is that in California, where 83% of the attorneys charged $300 an hour as their average charge, the average total cost of the collaborative case was about $41,485. And so that's the total case for all sides. And you would contrast that against what some sources on the internet have quoted as an average cost of $53,000 to $188,000 for each side in a divorce.
Yeah.
So obviously you can see that these cases can be done more economically than litigated cases.
Go to ZonderFamilyLaw.com if you'd like to know more about collaborative divorce and you'd like to get in touch with Lisa Zonder. ZonderFamilyLaw.com. I think we have time, about 2 minutes, Lisa, if you could give us some idea of what's going on for next week's show.
Next week, we're going to have, again, our previous featured guest, Dr. Geetu Bhatia. And so what we're thinking to talk about, again, is some of the custody issues that we haven't covered, and then maybe some lighter topics that we might go into. Stay tuned. We're excited about our show, especially on custody issues. We know a lot of our callers are very interested in custody.
I have one final question for the team, if we could do that quite rapidly in less than a minute. How do you, as professionals, handle the emotional side from your own perspective when dealing with this highly volatile situation that you do every day? Bruce, briefly.
Well, I do all the same things I teach my clients to do. I do some sort of meditative practice every day. I listen to my own self-talk, and I exercise.
What about you, Jerry? I'm sure you're involved in that directly and indirectly.
Yeah, it does affect us all, I'm sure. I do a couple things. When I look back when I went through it personally and how I felt, and I unfortunately didn't know about collaborative divorce at that time, and that's actually what got me into this. I try to put myself and understand both parties, where they're coming from, what their emotions are, and see if I could focus on helping them and doing what I could do to help them resolve it.
Well, that's it for this edition of Divorce Talk, Lisa Zonder Style. Thanks to our special guest, Bruce Friedenberg, and our regular panel, Jerry Cohen and Lisa Zonder. Our special guest next week is Dr. Geetu Bhatia. I'm Colin Flaxman.
Tune in every Saturday at 3 p.m. for Divorce, Lisa Zonder Style.
This radio programming is not intended to encourage anyone to seek a divorce. The producers assume that callers are seeking basic information. The radio program is intended to be an informational format and does not constitute legal advice. Anyone with legal, mental health, financial, or other professional questions is directed to retain a competent professional after carefully interviewing qualified professionals. A guest appearance by a particular panelist does not constitute a specific recommendation by the producers as to the expertise of that professional, nor does that panelist's views necessarily reflect the views of the producer.
We're News Talk 1590.
You think we might shut that thing off?
KVTA.
No, are you crazy?
Ventura, Simi Valley, Ojai.
My favorite radio station.